You're listening to episode number 59 of The Green Elephant in the Room. Greetings, this is your host, Rico Verde, back in Mexico after a month-long bicycle tour in eastern Oregon. The eastern part of Oregon, which is the majority of the state, is the least populated area in the continental U.S. One of the counties I biked through, Harney, boasted they only had one person per square mile. Most of the region is high desert and has some beautiful features, such as the Wallawa Mountains, Lake Malheur, which is an important wildlife refuge, and the Steens Mountains, which has the highest drivable road in Oregon, at just shy of 9,000 feet. I biked up that on a gravel road. Something I couldn't help but notice on my tour was, out there, they have one crop. They grow hay. That's it. And of course, that's to support their main livelihood, cattle. There are cows everywhere. Most of this region is federally protected land, but ranchers have been able to get exemptions for grazing rights. I learned that hay is a very water-intensive crop. That fact is going to acerbate the already extreme drought the region is experiencing. Next time you're traveling outside of cities and rural areas, I encourage you to use your own eyes and look around. How is the land being used? What are they growing? Where is the water coming from? Don't just passively cruise through our beautiful American landscapes and think it's none of your business. It's time to start looking critically at how our lands and resources are being used and the role we personally play in that. It's time to talk climate. Even though more than 75% of Americans believe climate change is happening, two-thirds of Americans rarely, if ever, talk about climate change with the people they care about. I get it. Talking about climate change can be tough, and sometimes it's downright awkward. It's time to change that. The most recent reports on the current and forecasted impacts of climate change are clear. We are running out of time. Silence is no longer an option, and it could be doing more damage than you think. Research shows there are typically four reasons why people don't want to talk about climate change. I don't know enough. I don't want to talk about scary things. I don't think I can make a difference. I don't want to cause an argument. The number one thing we can do to break the divisive rhetoric around climate change is do the exact thing we're not doing. Talk about it. The more people hear conversations about climate change, the more socially validated these conversations become. That's a big deal. Research shows that people tend to believe what they think those around them believe. So we need to signal to our friends and neighbors that climate is not only on our minds, it's a priority. And once they see that climate change is important enough for you to talk about, it's easier for them to talk about it to others also. It goes without saying that this is a difficult topic to address. One effective thing you could do is join a group of like-minded people who gather specifically to not only talk about, but to do something positive to heal the planet. There are engaged and active environmental groups all over the country and the world. As a small sample, there is the Climate Change Collective in Denver, Colorado, and the Citizens Climate Lobby in Durham, North Carolina, and the Hack the Planet group in Amsterdam. More about how to contact a group near you at the end of the show. Once you engage in dialogue with others about these issues, you will find it easier to discuss it with friends, family, and colleagues. This may sound funny, but the best way to talk about climate change is to listen. You may think the goal is to convince the other person of your perspective. A better way to look at it is just to have an actual conversation. And that only happens when people listen. We can't solve a problem we don't talk about. It's time to be part of the solution and speak up for nature. Talking about climate change can be tough, we've got tips to make it easier. On the Green Elephant webpage, we've collected some of the best proven information to make talking about climate change easier, including, yes, how to listen. You don't have to have an argument or win a debate to make a difference. Simply having the conversation is the most important thing you can do. Now it's time for News of the Future. Because you know what they say, the best way to predict the future is to invent it. The future of climate denial. ExxonMobil has been pushing its commitment to reducing carbon emissions with innovative energy solutions. Chevron would like to remind you that it's keeping the lights on during this dark time. BP is going hashtag net zero, but is also very proud of the digital innovations on its new enormous oil drilling platform in the Gulf of Mexico. Meanwhile, Shell insists it really supports women in traditionally male-dominated jobs. A casual social media user might get the impression the fossil fuel industry views itself as a social justice warrior, fighting on behalf of the poor, the marginalized, and women, at least based on its marketing material in recent years. You've probably heard of greenwashing, also known as green sheen, which is a form of marketing spin in which green public relations and green marketing are deceptively used to persuade the public that an organization's products and policies are environmentally friendly. Big Oil has been the leaders in denying climate change for decades. With more and more devastating climate events happening, it's harder to just outright reject what we already know is true. So the fossil fuel giants are adopting something called woke washing, the new climate science denialism. Now the industry's messaging is far more subtle and in many ways more effective than outright climate science denial. By downplaying the urgency of the climate crisis, the industry has new tools to delay efforts to curb fossil fuel emissions. A recent analysis of major oil corporations' advertising spending over a 30-year period shows the lion's share of ad dollars were directed not toward denial or even toward the industry's products, but toward pro-fossil fuel propaganda. These campaigns were designed to remind people repeatedly about all the great things oil companies do, how dependent we are on fossil fuels, and how vital the industry is to society. These fossil fuel giants are also overstating the industry's progress toward addressing climate change. For example, ExxonMobil has used an ad campaign to emphasize progress on addressing climate change while also downplaying the urgency of the crisis. The majority of their messaging is geared toward delaying action on climate or assurances that the fossil fuel industry has a grip on possible solutions. Researchers agreed that one theme was far more prevalent than the rest, the social justice argument. This strategy generally takes one of two forms, either warning that a transition away from fossil fuels will adversely impact poor and marginalized communities, or claims that oil and gas companies are aligned with those communities. This is the new form of denial known as woke washing, and these messages are effective. They work. While the social justice argument stands out as a favorite now, there are others that are in regular rotation too. One popular tactic is focusing on what individual consumers should be doing to reduce their own carbon footprints. The famous carbon footprint calculators you see online were developed by BP. Another widespread ploy is promoting the ideas that technology will save us and that fossil fuels are a necessary part of the solution. Remember, these are the wealthiest companies in the world. They can easily afford to hire the best PR firms who use very sophisticated methods to craft messages that appeal to consumers, even if they are based on misinformation or outright lies. The rise of greenwashing and now wokewashing paired with ineffective regulations contribute to consumer skepticism of all green claims and diminishes the power of the consumer to drive companies toward greener manufacturing processes and business operations. Don't forget, these are the very companies that got us into this climate mess to begin with. These huge oil companies lied for decades about the dangers of burning fossil fuels. They saw today's climate crisis coming. Their own scientists repeatedly warned top executives about it, and they decided to bring it on. The future of food waste. Throwing away food is one of the most destructive environmental practices that you could fix three times a day. Food waste is an appalling part of the American throwaway culture. It's costing us time, money, and our environment. We are wasting up to 40% of our food from farm to fork to face to landfill. It's time to stop biting off more than we can chew and clean our plates. And it's so easy to fix. To that point, Vermonters can no longer simply toss their food into trash cans. Under a new law that went into effect earlier this year, residents are now required to compost any unfinished food, including inedible scraps like peels, eggshells, and pits. While other states have taken steps to curb food waste, particularly at the business level, Vermont is the first to implement a statewide ban on food waste that also affects individuals. It's an ambitious policy, but one that Vermont lawmakers believe the state must take to achieve its goal of diverting 50% of all waste from landfills to facilities where it can be composted, recycled, or reused. Even before the ban went into effect, 72% of Vermonters were composting at home or fed food scraps to their livestock, according to a study from the University of Vermont. The Vermont story is that they have been working at composting and reducing food waste for nearly a decade before the law came into effect. Many people live in Vermont because they love the rural landscape, so it's part of their ethics to keep that landscape pristine and use food waste to nurture their soil. The state did invest in composting infrastructure to make compliance easier. Officials set aside about almost $1 million in grants for compost facilities to purchase equipment, expand their curbside pickup or drop-off services, and build anaerobic digesters that churn compost into energy. Vermont has both publicly owned and private composting facilities and has curbside collection. Even in rural areas where there is no pickup, there are more than 100 drop-off stations that offer food scrap collection, and almost every town has one within 10 miles. The new law, known as the Food Scrap Ban, addresses food waste from a few angles by providing different options for drop-off and curbside collection, along with resources to help residents. It also provides more support for food rescue and donation efforts to divert edible food from the trash to those in need. I know many think what we are really talking about here is very trivial. A few crumbs on your plate, a couple of rotten apples. As with anything we're dealing with 8 billion people, it adds up quickly. When we waste food, we also waste all the energy and water it takes to grow, harvest, transport, and package it. And if food goes to the landfill and rots, it produces methane, a greenhouse gas even more potent than carbon dioxide. Globally, if food waste could be represented as its own country, it would be the third largest greenhouse gas emitter behind China and the United States. I think what Vermont is doing is great. Even if this law isn't 100% perfect, it's a start. It can be a model for other states looking to address their food waste. Personally, worms eat my garbage, and those buggers do a nice job of turning my food waste into beautiful soil. On the webpage, I've included how that works and other resources for dealing with food waste in an environmentally responsible way. The future of plant-based foods. Riding the waves of success of soy, oat, and other alternatives to milk, as well as vegan burgers made by Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods, a broad variety of plant-based foods are showing up on restaurant menus and in grocery store aisles. And now, more companies, from small upstarts to established brands, are looking to get in on the action. Just a few years ago, plant-based burgers were a novelty. These days, the Beyond Burger and the Impossible Burger appear on roughly 5% of the menus of all the restaurants around the country, and 71% of Americans have tried a plant-based burger or other meat alternative. This summer, Quiznos started offering a plant-based corned beef. The Long John Silver's seafood chain tested plant-based crab cakes and fish fillets at 5 locations. A ton of fast food restaurants are putting Impossible Burgers or Beyond Burgers on their menus. Traditional burger places such as White Castle, Carl's Jr., Burger King, Denny's, Red Robin, and TGI Fridays are ahead of the trend. Over at the Golden Arches, McDonald's, no doubt about it, McPlant Burger, is already going strong in Canada, and they plan on bringing it to the U.S. this year. And it's not just fast food joints that are leading the way. When 11 Madison Park, a Michelin-starred restaurant in Manhattan, reopened in June after closing more than a year ago because of the pandemic, it did so with a new, totally plant-based menu. While only a small percentage of Americans are true vegans or vegetarians, that's not the audience that these new companies and products are chasing. Rather, they are going after the taste buds of the vegan curious, or the so-called flexitarians, a much larger segment of Americans who are seeking to reduce the amount of meat they eat. Some are shying away from it because of animal cruelty concerns, while others say the environment or perceived health benefits are factors. When it comes to lowering your carbon footprint, plant-based meats are the way to go. Livestock amounts for a whopping 15% of yearly greenhouse gas emissions, with cattle alone producing 65% of those emissions. In order to have cattle graze worldwide, forests are cleared en masse. Couple that with the methane that the cows produce, and our fast food burger habit is absolutely exacerbating climate change. A recent study compared the environmental impact of making a 4-ounce Beyond Burger with a similar beef product in the United States. It found that the production of the Beyond Burger generated 90% less greenhouse gas emissions, required 46% less energy, and demanded far less water and land use than it would take to raise the cow that would become the burger. And considering the staggering amount of animal suffering, going plant-based is a twofer for animals and the atmosphere. I am keenly aware that meat production is rising and many animal-based foods are a major part of a country's culture and identity, like here where I live in Mexico. Do yourself a favor and check out podcast number 3 entitled 5 Words That Will Save the Planet. Spoiler alert, 3 of those 5 words are eat less meat. I make a good case. Give it a listen. The future of climate pledges. Glasgow, once the second city of the British Empire and the biggest shipbuilder on the planet, next month hosts the 26th Conference of the Nations aiming to halt dangerous climate change. About 25,000 people are expected to travel to the Scottish city in November for the annual meeting of the United Nations COP, or Conference of the Parties, on global climate change. The negotiators face the challenge of turning the aspiration of the 2015 Paris Agreement to achieve net zero emissions by mid-century. 130 nations, including 4 out of 5 of the world's top emitters, are falling far short of meeting the 50% global emissions reduction required by 2030 to limit global temperature increases. Countries agreed under the 2015 Paris Agreement to attempt to prevent average global temperatures from rising beyond 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit. To do that, scientists say the world needs to cut global emissions in half by 2030 and to net zero by 2050. Nearly half of the 200 nations that signed the 2015 Paris Agreement Accord failed to submit new pledges to detail how they will beef up their previous targets. Most of the new pledges that have been submitted to move the needle toward that goal have come from developing countries with small carbon footprints. Countries responsible for over half of the current global emissions, for example, major polluters such as China and Russia, have yet to even submit plans before the climate summit. The global gap is huge, and closing that gap would require not just more bold pledges, but also for some countries to overshoot their targets in coming years. The November conference is seen as a crucial chance to clinch deals. For example, toward phasing out coal or financing forest projects. But striking those agreements will be tougher if the world's biggest emitters are not committed to cutting carbon emissions fast. And here's the key issue, and has been for decades. The Paris Agreement is based on voluntary targets. These pledges are really just promises to achieve massive cuts in carbon. There are no legal enforcement mechanisms in place. So the Glasgow Conference of the Parties, COP26, should be high noon for delivery, for turning aspirations into action. Sadly, while it's difficult to even achieve these aspirational goals, what is needed is firm commitments and action. An organization that tracks efforts by countries to cut carbon predicted that carbon emissions would decrease just by 40% by the middle of the century if countries stick to their current climate pledges. This means that even these unenforceable aspirational targets are not enough. Even more heartbreaking is, we have the technology, we have the financing to achieve these goals, we just don't have the political will. Recently, we've grown more accustomed to hearing about trillion-dollar figures. It's estimated to reach the zero target ambitions by mid-century, it would cost about $4 trillion. Yes, that's a lot of money, but this investment would be spread over the next 10 years. This is actually a very small investment in our future. And get this, more than 40% of the required reduction in emissions could come from measures that pay for themselves, such as improving efficiency, limiting gas leakage, and installing wind or solar in places where they are already cheap and efficient. You know, in all fairness, the United States has had the greatest contribution to overloading the atmosphere with CO2 than any other country. Don't you think the U.S. should bear the greatest responsibility for funding and demonstrating future global leadership as the world edges toward its carbon limits? Almost 30 years ago at the Earth Summit in Rio, nations agreed to a convention that promised to prevent dangerous climate change. The Glasgow COP is the 26th conference of the parties to that treaty. If it can deliver on 1.5 degrees, it will be the most important. But it could be another 30 years before we know for sure. It is common sense that individual countries' climate progress should be measured by the real-world action they are taking to cut emissions, not just their targets for future years. There is no doubt about it, an absence of concrete plans for 2030 makes these aspirations look like delusions.
Rico, you've given us a lot to chew on here. Now, we want to do something tangible. We want to act. Here are 3 things related to the show that you and I can do today. Number 1, join a meetup. As Rico said, talking about climate change is hard, but there are other people feeling the same way. you will find a link to several eco-related meetups on the Green Elephant webpage under the Call to Act tab. Number 2. To address greenwashing, a consumer has to put a critical eye on everything they buy. There are several apps that provide clear information that cuts through marketing jargon. Again, the Call to Act link on the Green Elephant website cites those apps and gives several other ways to combat greenwashing. Number 3. Kudos to Vermont for addressing the food waste in the trash can issue. Check out episode number 4 of the Green Elephant podcast to get the full scoop of how you can reduce your food waste. If you heard anything on today's show that you think friends or family might benefit from, please send them a link. For a Call to Act information, go to the Green Elephant website, which is packed with information, ideas, and resources. Much more than we could wedge into the podcast. That's bit.ly/greenelephantintheroom, all one word.